court case, the sixth case, Kip Posey versus Ashcroft. Mr. Moore?
May it please the court, my name is Jack Mwangi. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mr. Firehawk Kipfortian, who appeals a judgment of the district court for the Western District of Wisconsin, which dismissed his petitions for a writ of habeas corpus and for a writ of mandamus for lack of jurisdiction. Mr. Kipfortian appeals because he believes that the district court made an error because the district court did not, in fact, review whether it had jurisdiction in either case, whether it had jurisdiction to review the habeas petition, or whether it had jurisdiction to review the mandamus petition. We believe that federal courts retain jurisdiction to do both. In the case of the habeas petition, the district court concluded that Congress has stripped federal courts of jurisdiction to review discretionary decisions of the Attorney General, including the decision to execute an order of deportation. We, on the other hand, sought review of the validity of the order the Attorney General sought to execute, which we believe is not the same as seeking review of the mere execution of that order.
Is your client in jail?
He is and has been, Your Honor, since June the 27th.
Right. So is the object of the habeas corpus to get him out of jail or to somehow prevent him from being deported?
Your Honor, I believe the ultimate objective is to prevent his deportation based on an order that we do not believe is valid, and also to get the defendants to adjudicate his wife's petition for him, which has been pending now for about 7 years without adjudication.
Well, let me ask it this way. If we denied the... if we affirmed, would that mean that your client would be deported immediately, or what would happen next if we affirmed?
Your Honor, separate from this action, the plaintiff appellant's wife filed another petition on his behalf, which again is sitting unadjudicated and has been for almost a year. In that case, we would pursue that, and we're still pursuing it for adjudication. We still don't know why that is sitting. I'm hoping that that is something else that we can pursue. But to answer your question, theoretically, if this court affirmed, he would probably be deported.
Even while this his wife's petition, or the two petitions were pending, that it wouldn't operate to stay the deportation?
I believe so, Your Honor.
That they wouldn't?
I believe they would not,
Your Honor. They would not. So he would be exposed.
Is that the relative petition?
That is the relative petition, Your Honor.
That's really her petition, really on his behalf, but he doesn't have to be here in order to get that.
He does not, Your Honor, and the problem is that if he is deported and he departs the United States, then he's barred from reentry because he's been present for more than a year without status.
He then hits into another hole, doesn't he?
Then he can be barred for 10 years from coming back. He qualifies for the green card but cannot get it.
Even on that relative petition?
That is correct, Your Honor. And that is the dilemma. So without his wife's petition being adjudicated, he does not get relief, and if he departs, he will not get relief at all. And so it's very critical that that petition be adjudicated.
Wait, maybe I missed your answer to Judge Manger. Are you saying that if he is deported, then even if her petition is granted, he couldn't come back?
He cannot, Your Honor, because Congress, in the changes in 1996, imposed a bar under Section 212 sub A sub C sub 9, in which if a non-citizen is present in the United States for 6 months without status and is deported or exits voluntarily, that non-citizen can then be barred from reentry for a period of 3 years. If a non-citizen is present for 12 months or more, that non-citizen can be barred for 10 years or more. So the practical problem is that if my client departs the United States under an order of deportation, yes, his wife's petition can be granted, whereby he's entitled to applying for a green card, but then at the border with the green card, he can be turned away because he was present for more than a year unlawfully. And I think the practical solution to his problem is that his wife's petition be adjudicated, which, because he's present in the United States, he doesn't have any criminal convictions that bar him from becoming a permanent resident, he then can seek adjustment of status, which persons who are present in the United States who have United States citizens can seek, and the Attorney General or the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security can grant them, and they can seek whatever waivers by paying $195 of whatever bars to admissibility may exist. And in this case, I don't even think there's a bar to Mr. Kipotian's adjustment of status. And we've been seeking an adjudication of the wife's petition, and...
Well, since it's her petition, though, shouldn't she file the mandamus?
She can file a mandamus, and she has not filed a mandamus simply because at the point that we filed the action, he as a beneficiary had an interest in the petition, and it seemed logical because as an interested party in the outcome, since he had an action, a petition for a writ of habeas corpus, it seemed logical to have him also petition for action on the petition after all that would give him this benefit. And because the respondent or the defendant for the petition for the writ of habeas corpus is the same as the defendant for the petition for a writ of mandamus, we just made it simple and just had him petition for both, but also because the wife is diabetic, she's hypertensive, and if this involved having her come to court, testify, or be involved in the action, it would really be a strain on her health, and we wanted to keep her out of it as much as we could.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Debbie Messier, and I represent the Attorney General. In this case, the District Court properly decided that it lacked jurisdiction to either review the AG's decision to execute the final order of deportation against Mr. Kipotian or the AG's decision to not adjudicate his immigrant petition. And the District Court made that decision under 8 U.S.C. 1252G. And this Court's holdings in Sharif and Chipinski. The Court is familiar with the facts in this case, but I'd like to bring the Court's attention to a couple of key facts. First, Mr. Kitpazian entered the U.S. as a visitor, overstayed his visa, and applied for asylum. He was given a deportation hearing where he could present the merits of his asylum claim. He failed to appear at his deportation hearing. When he was ordered deported in absentia in 1993, he failed to appeal that order to the BIA. He failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. He then failed to appeal that final order of deportation to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the proper venue for a review of his final order of deportation. He only filed a motion to reopen with the immigration court after the district court denied relief to him in the fall.
In the fall, you mean last fall?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
When he said in the fall.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court made its decision, I believe, in the early fall or late summer, and he filed his motion to reopen after that decision was made.
This was last year.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So this sat around for
10 years, Your Honor. With respect to Mr.
I'm bothered by the petition for mandamus. I mean, putting aside the question whether it's filed by the right person, but is Mr. Mwangi correct that if he's deported, he won't be able to get back in for 10 years, even if her petition is granted?
That is correct, Your Honor. There's a couple issues there. Had he not had a final order of deportation, had he appealed his final order of deportation and been successful in that appeal, he would have been eligible for a waiver, which is typically granted to the immediate relatives of U.S. citizens who successfully petition for them to obtain a green card. Secondly, there's the issue of the misrepresentations and the omissions from the
right. Now I understand there are problems with the. I was just thinking about whether. So you're saying basically the mandamus is untimely because he should have had the petition been for. Had her petition been filed at the time, he could have appealed from the final order of deportation.
Had Mr. Kitpazian appealed his final order of deportation from the immigration judge back in 93, and then appealed if he was successful onto the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals and been successful, he would not have a final order of deportation. And he could have left the country voluntarily, or then at that point sought adjustment of status, and there would be no bar. He could seek that waiver, as far as I know, Your Honor. We'd be happy to brief that issue separately. We didn't focus on that issue in our briefing to the court.
You know, when was he married?
He was married, I believe, Your Honor, in 1995.
So it was subsequent to the.
That's correct.
The way, obviously, this whole thing operates, if he's appealed, it'd probably still be sitting.
Yes, Your Honor, that might be a possibility. And that brings up another point. Under the immigration regulations, if an alien who has been in removal proceedings marries after proceedings are initiated, that itself raises a red flag for the government, and creates a prima facie reason to investigate the bona fides of the marriage.
Now, if we affirm, will he be immediately deported, or what? Or does he have any other remedies?
He would be immediately deported, Your Honor. At that point, he would lack any other remedies, unless he chose at that point to go to the proper judicial circuit and appeal his final order of deportation.
Is that too late?
It would be the government's position that it would be too late. He's certainly free to try to do that. Turning to Mr. Kitpazian's arguments with respect to the execution of the order of removal, the Supreme Court's decision in Arab American and this court's decision in Sharif are directly on point. A district court does not have jurisdiction to review the Attorney General's decision to execute an order of removal, and that is quite simply what we have here. With all due respect to opposing counsel, if Mr. Kitpazian wanted to challenge the validity of the bona fides of the underlying order of deportation, he should have taken his claim to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Under the statute, that would be the proper place to go, because that is the judicial district in which his immigration proceedings occurred. Secondly, with respect to his points on the petition for mandamus, he wants to compel, he wants the court to ask, to compel the Attorney General to adjudicate his wife's I-130 petition. Again, that issue is squarely controlled by Chapinski. There, this court held that a district court lacks the jurisdiction to compel the AG to initiate or resolve proceedings that would lead to relief from
removal. What about our decision in Edir? Doesn't that establish a pretty broad right of mandamus?
Your Honor, respectfully, it does not apply to this case. It is distinguishable from this case. This case is controlled by Chapinski and also by Bach, which is a recent case decided by this court on May 12th of this year, and Gomez-Chavez. There, the court said, in plain terms, an alien may not avoid the jurisdictional bar, the 1252G jurisdictional bar, by recharacterizing a claim as one challenging refusal to act. And that is what we have here. Even if there were jurisdiction, Your Honor, the government submits he has not met the elements of mandamus required by this court in Blaney. He has not demonstrated a clear right to relief under the I-130 petition because of the defects and misrepresentations on the petition. And there are substantial defects on that petition. The petition was supposed to be signed by his wife.
Why doesn't the INS just deny it? Why does it sit on it? It is rather dubious to extinguish a person's rights just by refusing to adjudicate. And the stronger your argument about the defects of her petition, the more mysterious is the delay in denying it.
Your Honor, we would submit that Mr. Kitpatian has had formal notice of the defects on this petition at least since last summer when this case was litigated before the district court. He's not made, to my knowledge, any effort to correct those defects.
Suggesting a new judicial technique. I don't know whether the chief judge will care to adopt it for a second, but with that, if you have a weak case, you just don't, if you have a weak appeal, you just don't decide it.
Your Honor,
It has the same effect as...
The court, I'm sure, is aware that the service has had a large volume of cases to deal with and has had some issues in a timely and quick processing of petitions. However, that's really not the central issue here. The central issue is his wife didn't sign the petition, and he misrepresented the fact that he said he had not been in deportation proceedings on his petition. In fact, he had been, and he was quite aware that he had been. He didn't give his A number. He knew what his A number was. The point is, the petition is not properly filed as far as the service is concerned, and he has no clear right to relief. I see that my time is coming to a close. I just want to quickly touch on the arguments he makes on the bizarre miscarriage of justice, the Chapinski bizarre miscarriage of justice. The government's position is that that argument is without merit. First, he made no effort to raise the claim of ineffective assistance of counsel with the BIA under the established procedure outlined by the BIA in Lozada. There's a long-standing procedure that an alien has to go through to show that he had ineffective assistance of counsel. Secondly, he himself has not pursued the administrative and judicial remedies available to him. And finally, again, the defects and misrepresentations in his petition that occurred because of his lack of diligence in filling it out or for whatever other reason. So there can be no bizarre miscarriage of justice in this case and no exception to the 1252G bar to a district court's jurisdiction. In sum, the district court properly dismissed Mr. Kitpatian's petition for habeas and mandamus because it lacked jurisdiction under 1252G, and the government asks this court to affirm that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Judge Posner's question goes to the heart of this case, and I'm glad Judge Posner asked that question because it is the crux of the matter. This petition by my client's wife has been pending now since 1996. My client and his wife were noticed for interview. They appeared before the Immigration and Naturalization Service on January 19, 2000. The instructions of the adjudications manual of the INS require the adjudicator to correct an application's errors, and I, as an immigration practitioner, have attended hundreds of these at which whole forms that have mistakes have been struck out and an applicant has been made to fill out a new one if there are corrections that need to be made that the examiner feels are, you know, too problematic to just correct on the form. Otherwise, if a signature is missing, someone can be made to sign in front of the examiner. So any incorrect information on the I-130 to me is a very flimsy excuse to hold this form for 7 years.
Yes. Well, the INS suggests, you know, that they don't have evidence of that January interview. Do you know of any evidence to support the interview occurring?
I'm not questioning it, I'm just asking. Mr. Antonio Lopez makes a declaration. It is not an affidavit. It is not sworn. We have it as part of our appendix, and it's their document. In it, he very carefully says, and it is a very interesting document. He does not say, I've examined the physical file. He says he's examined the BETS system, which is a database. And he says it shows no disposition of the January 19, 2000 interview. It does not say they did not appear. It does not say the interview discovered they were lying. It does not say the I-130 was not corrected. It just says there is no evidence of the disposition of the January 19, 2000 interview.
Is there any documentation prepared by the Lopez stand-in? Mr. Lopez?
I do not have it, Your Honor. And what I have...
Your client didn't walk away with anything reflecting a date of that interview.
I don't believe so. And in my experience, as someone who accompanies people to these interviews, they never do. The evidence remains in the custody of the examining officer. The people who are subject to these interviews are promised a notice in the mail, and we always leave happily and go wait for the notice in the mail. And these defendants cannot claim that somehow they have not acted because my client has failed to do something. They have all the evidence they need. They fingerprinted him, and the fingerprints they took in 1998 told them exactly who he was, including the fact that he had applied for asylum. In addition, the claim that he did not appeal the in absentia order is really belied by the board's own rule that an appeal does not lie when an in absentia order has been entered. That's a well-settled rule under Gonzalez-Lopez, which is a 1993 decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals. If they enter one of those, you cannot appeal it, and therefore, what is my client to do under those circumstances? And to inform the court, we did, after he discovered when the FBI picked him up in June last year, we eventually did file a motion to reopen, which the judge in Arlington denied. We appealed that. The board dismissed the appeal. We moved to reconsider, and I just received the notice that they denied reconsideration. We're now considering appealing that, but we have not had time to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.